You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Duncan with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Happy Friday, everybody. Happy weekend. Quite a few Timberwolves notes to get to off the top here today, so we'll cover those first. Then we'll get into number 20 on Big Board 2.0. This will actually wrap up Big Board 2.0. I'm going to expand it to cover, I'm going to shoot for 35 players to kind of cover through number 33 for the Wolves pick on this final go-round of the Big Board. Dive a little bit deeper into some of the names that I think the Timberwolves could target at number 1, 17, and 33. And then we'll finish today by continuing the Division Spotlight series. We've taken care of Denver and Oklahoma City so far. So today what I'd like to do is focus on the Utah Jazz and what their offseason is going to look like based on their cap sheet and their roster, what we can expect Utah to do this offseason. So before we do that, a quick reminder here off the top to please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you prefer to get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, so a couple of Wolves notes off the top. First of all, Kevin Garnett's in Minnesota right now. This news came out early on Friday. It's apparently completely unrelated to, it's definitely unrelated to the ownership search for the Timberwolves. And there isn't really much in terms of a Wolves connection related to him being here. He's here to take part in some community efforts. He's meeting. So this is according to Chris Hine at the Star Tribune had an article about this on Friday. And Chris says Garnett spent part of Thursday evening in Ventura Village meeting with business owners and customers of a recently opened Chase Bank branch that's geared toward helping that community. Talks about a number of things he's trying to do in the community, wants to assist Chase Bank in trying to help underserved communities. It's the first time he's been to Minneapolis since the George Floyd killing in late May. And he basically is just trying to be here to help. He's going to visit the George Floyd Memorial. Has a couple of quotes about how Minneapolis just feels different now. And, you know, he's been here a long time, obviously not physically now in the last few months, but he spent a lot of time in Minnesota. Obviously, he still has a house here. And he's trying to help and be involved in the community. He was asked, of course, by the media about the franchise, the potential for ownership in the Timberwolves franchise. Obviously, Garnett, this came out over the summer that he was involved. Actually, Garnett posted himself on social media that he was involved in a group trying to make a bid on the Timberwolves. When he was asked about it, his exact quote is, according to Chris Hine at the Star Tribune, "It's good to be back in Minnesota. Y'all know I can't speak on certain things, but thank you guys for coming." So Garnett is doing what he should be, which is staying mum on the ownership possibility. There hasn't been any word that his group has been seriously involved in talks, has gotten any deeper, other than that they were putting together a bid, and he was working with a couple of venture capitalists, a couple of billionaires, I think one from Florida, one from California, as the primary backers of the bid. And then Garnett was obviously going to be the face of it in terms of locally in the Twin Cities. And there were a lot of questions early on when this first broke over the summer as to whether or not Garnett would get involved in basketball operations, if he'd leave Gerson Rosas alone, et cetera, et cetera. But we don't know much else about this other than there's been a couple of other groups that have gotten further in the process. There was even the exclusive negotiating window for 3 or 4 weeks in September with a group led by the former minority owner of the Memphis Grizzlies. That nothing's come of that yet. And we don't have much additional information. So I guess as far as Kevin Garnett goes, good on him for getting involved in the community, for, you know, still maintaining his connection to the Twin Cities and doing what he can to support the community through what has continued to be a really tough time following George Floyd's death in late May. And nothing to glean from this in terms of the ownership possibility, but I guess notable that he didn't completely shut it down and that he was, you know, back in Minnesota and trying to stay plugged into the community regardless. Other Wolves news, a coaching staff update. We didn't talk about this in September on the show at all. It wasn't, I guess, as notable until now because the Wolves have backfilled their coaching staff. But former player development coach Brian Randall left the Timberwolves to join the Phoenix Suns. Randall was hired by Tom Thibodeau prior to the 18-19 season and stayed on the staff with Ryan Saunders as interim coach, and then the following year, this past year, with Saunders as head coach. And Randall left to join the Phoenix Suns back in September. The Wolves have now hired, according to Keith Pompey, who's also the Locked On, he's a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, but also the Locked On Sixers host. He tweeted on Thursday that Joseph Blair, former Sixers assistant coach, has taken a coaching position with the Timberwolves. There's several coaching staff changes in Philadelphia with Doc Rivers taking over. In fact, Minnesota native Dave Yeager, who had interviewed for head coaching jobs with Indiana and I think maybe Chicago prior to them filling that vacancy, is going to be on Doc Rivers' staff in Philadelphia, which is really a coup for them. Yeager's a good coach. He's been a head coach for six different seasons. And so Doc's building up his staff means that a lot of those guys have had the opportunity to go elsewhere. Joseph Blair is getting hired in Minnesota. Blair only spent 1 year as a Sixers assistant, he actually was one of their primary offensive coaches last year. Of course, Philadelphia's offense wasn't outstanding. They were only 13th in offensive rating. They were 20th in points per game, 22nd in three-point attempts. They were 9th in three-point percentage. Of course, a lot of the Sixers' issues were because of the way their roster was built and not necessarily because of their offensive scheme, although it's fair to point some fingers there because there was a lot of talent. But the awkward fits of Josh Richardson and Al Horford with Embiid and Simmons were not ideal. As far as Joseph Blair goes, he was the head coach of the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, the G League team of the Houston Rockets, and they won the championship with him as head coach in 18 prior to him joining Philadelphia. So a good track record. There's obviously a connection there with Gerson Rosas, who was in Houston when they would have, I'm sure, was involved in the hiring process when Blair became the head coach of their G League team. So there's your clear connection between Rosas and this hire. There's always something that ties Rosas to these hires, or at least Gupta or somebody else in the front office. And to see to find that connection was not all that difficult. But obviously Blair has had some success at the G League level as a head coach. He's got a good background in terms of being a coach at the international level and a player at the international level, especially, and was part of a playoff team in Philadelphia, even if they did disappoint last year. One other quick note was related to the potential ownership, situation, the impact that situation could have on the number one pick in this year's draft. It's been kind of talked about all along as it's possible that because the ownership situation is a little bit in flux, it could impact what the Wolves are able to do or allowed to do with the number one pick. It came up again in an ESPN piece. ESPN finally put out some notes on the draft, what their analysts are hearing, Jonathan Givani and others. And Givani notes that the Wolves ownership situation could impact the Wolves' ability to trade the number one pick, or at least at this point, rival teams don't know what the Wolves are trying to do because the Wolves are being so close to the vest. And also there's this wild card of could there be a mandate from Glenn Taylor that, hey, well, we're trying to sell the team. Gerson, you can't make a big move with the number one pick. You can't take on salary like a Ben Simmons salary, a Devin Booker salary, or something like Bradley Beal. We can't get into the luxury tax. We can't toe the line. We can't do anything crazy while all this stuff is out there. And, you know, as far as we know, there's no sale pending, but obviously they want to keep things as clean as possible. So maybe that plays into it. There's also, you know, it makes the Wolves that much more attractive as a piece to, as a business acquisition for some of these groups, I'm sure, to have the number one pick. Right now, it's the possibility of what could happen, but it could be the marketability of a LaMelo Ball. Perhaps that plays into it. I really don't see Rosas being too excited. I don't think Glenn Taylor dictates to Rosas, hey, he's never really gotten that involved in the basketball operations side to say you've got to take the guy who's more marketable. I don't think that's something Glenn would do. Perhaps if something comes together quickly, maybe, depending on who it is, maybe the new owner meddles to that point and wants to make a big splash, or wants to make a splash by trading the pick, or doesn't want to take on salary. So there's certainly some impact there. We just don't really know how much. I think it's kind of nebulous, and we won't really have a sense for what the impact of this pending, or I guess the it's not a pending situation because there's nothing pending in terms of a sale, but this kind of influx ownership situation, what kind of impact that's really having on the Wolves in terms of the franchise being on the market. So we'll find out as we get closer to the draft and, you know, maybe find out in the wake of the draft and in the wake of a potential ownership sale at some point. All right, next what I want to do is talk number 20 on my Big Board 2.0. We'll wrap up Big Board 2.0 with number 20, and then next week get back into 3.0. So number 20 is coming up next. All right, let's talk about number 20 on the Lockdown Wolves Big Board 2.0. A quick run through the top 19. Again, a note, James Wiseman is not included. He will be on the next Big Board. I'm going to plug him in somewhere in the middle. but I had left him off the board initially because I wanted to start the conversation with guys that I thought the Wolves could take at the top of the board. And then, frankly, he just kind of got lost in the shuffle. And he obviously is going to be higher than 20 on my Timberwolves big board. So he will be in big board 3.0, but you won't notice him in this list as I run down it. So here's where we're at so far. Number one is LaMelo Ball. Number two on the big board is Anthony Edwards. Number three, Killian Hayes. Four, Obi Toppin. Five, Devin Vassell. Six, Tyrese Haliburton out of Iowa State. Seven is Patrick Williams from Florida State. Eight, Isaac Okoro out of Auburn. Nine, Sadiq Bey. 10, Onyeka Okongwu. 11 is Aaron Nesmith. 12, Kyra Lewis Jr. 13, Dini Avdija. 14 is Alexei Pokusevski. 15, RJ Hampton. Number 16, Tyrese Maxey. 17, Tyrell Terry. 18, Precious Achiuwa. And 19, Josh Green. Today, we'll hit on number 20. That is Theo Maledon, who is a point guard who's been playing overseas and has been playing at in France, actually, on a team that's owned by Tony Parker. And frankly, there's quite a bit of Tony Parker-esque, I guess, more finishing around the rim and kind of in the paint to his game. You can definitely see that. He's not even 19 years old yet, and he's really big. He's 6 foot four, about 6'8.5", almost 6'9" wingspan, and he clearly is a physical specimen for a point guard. And he's one of those prospects who's really kind of good at a lot of things, but he's not great at any one thing. His one kind of clear above average skill is playmaking and court vision and passing, lumping all those things together. He's very talented, and combined with his size, that makes him a really effective playmaker. There's some similarities. If you watch him, you think of some of the other bigger kind of pass-first point guards in recent draft history. I think of like he's not now, and this is strictly in terms of his passing ability and size, like an Elfrid Payton type player, even a young Ricky Rubio in terms of his passing ability. He's maybe not quite on that level, but his vision, his size, his passing ability, where he's able to kind of see things before they happen, and he's able to deliver passes to teammates and can actually, you know, pass teammates open at times because of his ability. He's not super athletic, which is what makes his ability to score, I guess, that much more impressive, because he has to be smart and crafty, finish through contact. He's a little better around the rim than Ricky Rubio was at this stage. However, he doesn't have a super fast first step, and there's a question as to whether or not he'll be able to turn the corner at the NBA level and also finish at the rim with athleticism, or with somewhat of a lack of athleticism. He's not super dynamic. He's just impressive and knows how to play. He's an okay defender. You'd want him to be better based on his length and his size. You'd think he'd contribute more in terms of blocks and steals. He's an okay rebounder, but you'd still expect there to be more rebounding prowess there based on his size and his IQ, his basketball IQ. So for me, I think he's likely going to rise a little bit on my big board next time around. He could be a target at 17, but he's another one of these guys, and there's several of them in the middle of this draft who we've already talked about, who it's tough to see him as much more than a good backup point guard. I do think Maledon actually has a higher ceiling than some of these other guys, simply because of his size and his awareness and his intelligence on both ends of the court. He knows how to play some of those things that can't be taught, the court vision and also the size. He needs to figure out his shooting numbers are actually okay. His catch and shoot numbers are decent. He can play off the ball a little bit. In some ways, there's some similarities to a less dynamic D'Angelo Russell. And again, size, passing ability, anticipation, he can catch and shoot a little bit. Russell had a pretty raw offensive game coming out of college as well, but everybody knew he was a great passer and he had good size and limited athleticism. So there are some similarities there too. Now, Maledon would have to make a huge leap shooting-wise to be D'Angelo Russell. But I mean, Russell progressed quite a bit in that category as well as he moved through his first 2-3 years in the NBA. It wasn't until he got to Brooklyn when he became more of a dynamic offensive player in terms of scoring the ball. And so there is maybe an upside of like a D'Angelo Russell type player, but there's maybe, I mean, he's a little bit longer wingspan wise than Russell and maybe has a little bit more in terms of basketball awareness on the defensive end of the floor, and for the most part plays hard. So I think that's probably his ceiling, which is good, especially at this part in the point in the draft. But I think his most likely scenario is as a solid backup point guard, maybe a starter on a second tier team. But on a good team, he's probably a backup. That's probably his ceiling. That's probably how he profiles. So I could see him as a possibility at 17 for the Wolves, depending on what they think about Jordan McLaughlin. I know I've said that about a few different guys, because there's just a lot of these point guard types who realistically aren't much more than, you know, their floor and their ceiling is somewhere around backup point guard. Maybe it's a combo scoring guard off the bench, a sixth man type. Melanon, it's more of a pure point guard with size. And if he continues to develop his jumper, I mean, I think there's enough catch and shoot ability there that he could play off the ball some, and that could make him an attractive, you know, in some ways, a bigger Jordan McLaughlin, maybe with not quite as much athleticism, but a bigger frame. You know, there's some similarities there too. So I could see him as a possibility if the Wolves were to choose to move on from Jordan McLaughlin, which, as I've said previously, I think would be a little bit of a surprise at this point. So Maledon's number 20 on my big board, but again, I could see him climbing just a bit in the next version, the 3.0 version of the big board, which again, I'm going to expand. I'm going to try to get to 35 players to get us past the number 33 pick that the Wolves have. I will spend extra time on players that I think are legitimate options for the Wolves. We'll probably skip past some of the, you know, we won't spend much time on a James Wiseman. We won't spend much time on some of these backup point guards that I simply just don't think they profile as a fit for what Gerson Rosas and Ryan Saunders want. They don't want, for instance, Cole Anthony Slid. He's not on this version of my big board. He's more of a gunner type. You know, he's going to be in the 20s, but I don't see him as the type of player that Gerson Rosas is going to get excited to draft, a low efficiency shoot first point guard. The Wolves have a relatively high efficiency shoot first point guard in their starting lineup. They don't need, you know, the new version of Jamal Crawford off the bench for what they're trying to do. So, we won't spend as much time on some of those players. We'll spend more time on guys, 3-and-D type guys, maybe some of the power forwards, the big guys who could play next to Towns or be the primary backup big man on the Timberwolves as we move through the big board. So that's going to start kicking off next week, so stay tuned for that. Next up, I want to talk about the cap sheet and the offseason situation for the Utah Jazz, which is the third of four divisional rivals that we will profile as part of this series. That's coming up next. All right, we're going to move through every team in the NBA as part of the next few weeks, kind of setting up free agency in the offseason to look at other teams to see what their cap situation is, what free agents they're going to have. Are there trade targets that the Timberwolves could target? Are there teams that are looking to move on from players that the Timberwolves could jump at the chance to get? So I'm starting with the Northwest Division, and frankly, it's unlikely the Wolves make any big trades with anyone in the division. We started with Denver. There's maybe some possibility there. There could be some sign-and-trade opportunities. Jeremy Grant's a possibility. Oklahoma City doesn't have much in terms of tradable assets, but they're going to have a lot of turnover. Now, today I want to talk about Utah. Utah's had a pretty disappointing last couple of years, and obviously they're in a better spot in terms of recent success than the Timberwolves, so I don't want to pretend like that's not the case. But in moving on from Ricky Rubio, acquiring Mike Conley, bringing in Bojan Bogdanović was obviously really smart, but they've kind of put themselves in a weird spot. Mike Conley's got an ETO, an early termination option. He could opt out prior to this next year. He's got a $34.5 million contract for this season only before he hits unrestricted free agency. But there's a solid chance he opts out and re-signs at a smaller per year value. He's 33 years old, so he's not going to get anything near $34.5 million, I should say, on the open market. However, he could get more years at less average annual value and ultimately, you know, extend what he's able to get paid. Now, he didn't have a great season. He had some injury issues, but it's tough to know exactly what's going to happen with him. And so the Jazz have to make that decision. They're going to give Donovan Mitchell his max contract here in the next couple of weeks. As soon as they're able, he's going to get that. And then they've got Rudy Gobert coming off of a max deal or a near max deal, I guess, and he'll be an unrestricted free agent. So basically they're going to swap out Mitchell's contract for Gobert's, and then they'll have to make a decision on whether they should bring back Rudy Gobert or not. Some of the peripheral pieces are in place. Royce O'Neal already signed an extension. He's getting paid between $8.5 and $9.5 million over the next 3 years. And Bojan Bogdanović, as mentioned, is under contract. Joe Ingles already signed a one-year extension for $14 million prior to last year. So he's under contract through 21. And, I mean, that's basically their rotation. They have to figure out what they're doing with Conley. They have to figure out if they're bringing back Gobert. And everybody else is just kind of still there or not getting paid a ton of money. I guess George Niang is going to be a free agent. He was only getting paid $1.8 million last year. Ed Davis was a complete disappointment in Utah and was hurt for a lot of the year and then was ineffective and didn't play much. He was getting paid $5 million, so that comes off the books. There's a couple of other kind of fringe rotation pieces that they're going to have their rights to that they'll have to, in restricted free agency, Tony Bradley, for instance, on the roster will be an RFA. They'll have some of these other guys in the next year, so they'll got to make a decision on. But they don't have much in terms of trade capital. They don't have very many tradable contracts. They're kind of stuck and have to make it work with Donovan Mitchell. And to be clear, if I'm in the Jazz position, I very likely give Donovan Mitchell that max contract. But he is not quite as effective in terms of impacting winning as a lot of other guys on max deals. Now, to be clear, he's way better than Andrew Wiggins was when Wiggins got a max contract. It's not even close. However, Mitchell's playing style and the success and really lack of top-level success the Jazz have had over the past couple of years would give me some pause to give him $40-plus million a year over the next five seasons. They're going to do it. He's going to get the money. And then they got to figure out how to build around him. And that becomes tricky. Now, is Gobert worth a max contract? That's a whole other conversation. He's arguably the best defensive player in the league, probably certainly top three, along with Giannis and probably Bam Adebayo, and I guess you could argue Anthony Davis and LeBron. So, you know, there's no question he's in the top five. But is Gobert's style of play and what he brings offensively, how great of a fit is that? I mean, it's a fit in the pick and roll with Donovan Mitchell. It's obviously a huge part of what the Jazz do defensively, and it'd be really tough to move on from Gobert and kind of backfill his abilities. So it's really unclear what the Jazz are ultimately going to do, and it's a really tough decision. But building around a ball-dominant wing in today's NBA, and a ball-dominant wing that's, you know, he's an above-average three-point shooter, but he's not a knockdown sharpshooter, that can be complicated. And I think it's likely that they bring back Gobert. I mean, it's hard to just let a guy like that walk. A sign-and-trade's a possibility. But then what are the other pieces? Ricky Rubio wasn't seen as quite a fit. Bogdanovich is a good fit. But they need some other guys who can create offense and also be effective defenders. And Mike Conley may be past his usefulness in terms of at least certainly at $34.5 million on both ends of the floor, frankly. So they've got a really interesting situation. And that's a team that the Wolves need to be able to surpass in the next year to 2 years. As you know, if the Wolves are building around Russell and Towns, they have to be able to get past the Jazz. They should be better than the Thunder this year. And the Nuggets, you know, Portland was a disappointment this season, but they're not really going anywhere. So the Wolves need to make it their goal to be better than the Thunder, to be better than the Jazz. And I think those things are doable. And, you know, Portland will get to next week. But between Portland and the Nuggets, I mean, this is a tough division still, but there's a couple of these teams that have some weird parts to work with and not a ton of tradable assets in the Thunder and the Jazz. And so if Minnesota's front office can capitalize on some of the assets they have and James Johnson's expiring deal and their draft capital this year, future draft picks beyond 21, Jarrett Culver as an asset potentially, I do think that the Wolves have an opportunity to make gains within their division, just kind of based on how weird some of these cap sheets are and the roster construction, frankly, of a team like the Jazz. And they can't figure out how to go to the next level with Mitchell and Gobert as their centerpieces. So be really fascinating to see how this offseason goes for Utah. We'll know pretty quickly once Mitchell signs this extension and what happens with Gobert. And then that will kind of give us a sense for how the rest of the offseason might set up. And obviously before next season, we'll preview the division and all these conversations that are kind of up in the air now, we'll know exactly what's happened with them and can get a better sense for how the Wolves slot in with some of these teams that have been playoff teams but haven't been as good as expected in recent years. All right, that's all we have for you today. We'll be back on Monday. Of course, if you are new to the podcast, this is a daily show Monday through Friday. We'll be back on Monday. We will reset the Big Board 3.0, going to do some additional research on some of these guys and really kind of plant my flag on a few players that I like for the Wolves in the middle of the first round and also the top part of the second round. So as we're now within a month of the draft, we will talk more draft and then continue our series looking at cap sheets from teams around the league, potential trade targets, and potential free agents from each team as well. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.